3 hired authors, 100 plus college and university presidents, dozens of actionable insights for academic leaders. Commencement, the beginning of a new era in higher education, is now available on Amazon. Welcome back, everybody. It's your time to ed up on the Ed Up Experience podcast, where we make education your business. Dr. Joe Seleucio back with you for another episode. And we roll on and on and on as we fast and furiously approach 700 episodes. I don't even know what number we're on now, but I know it's over 600, but under 700. For those of you that have picked up a copy of Commencement, the beginning of a new era in higher education, and have taken the time to read it, you've honored us. Thank you so much. Leave us a review on Amazon. Let us know what you think of the book. Who knows? We may write another one. I'll have to get my co-author, Kate Colbert, on the task of listening to another 100 podcast episodes with college and university presidents. We're like over 210 somewhere presidents that we've interviewed. We have another one today. We just can't stop getting the insight from these incredible people leading today's institutions. But before I bring him on, I want to bring on my guest co-host. He hasn't been around for a while. He's been doing his own thing, aerospacing, engineering, civiling. I don't know. I'm making up words. But he is the one and the only, Dr. Vistas Karbari. He's a professor of mechanical aerospace and civil engineering. If you couldn't do one, you have to do them all at the University of Texas Arlington. Vistas, welcome back.
Thanks a lot, Joe. It's always a pleasure to be here, and I try to be civil as much as I can.
Yes, you haven't been here in a while. I feel like you've been avoiding me.
Now, how would anyone avoid you? The world famous globetrotter, the expert in a variety of different fields, and doing things on podcasting that brings the academic world together.
Well, I do say to myself every day. And then I meet you, and then that goes away. So, you know, we're all working from somewhere. But let's get to our guest today. He's got a lot to say about what's going on in higher ed today. Let's get him here. Here he is. His name is Sanjeet Sethi. He's the president of the Minneapolis College of Art and Design. Sanjeet, how are you?
I'm doing well, Joe. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Well, we're glad to have you here to talk about really an important topic of arts and what's going on in higher education. But before we get there, let's hear a little bit about the Minneapolis College of Art and Design. Besides the obvious of where you are, tell us what you do, how you do it.
Sure. Yeah, we're a private art and design institution that was founded in 1884 and has really had a primary mission of educating artists and designers of different walks of life. And we've been remarkable at what we've done despite all that we've seen, especially over the past few years. We have about 730 students as part of our population. We also have a series of graduate programs, two of which are completely online. One is partially online with an in-person component to it. And in addition to a master's in fine arts program, which is the terminal degree in the arts field.
Amazing.
How are things going? Talk to us. I mean, you know, things have been up and down. We know the COVID thing. We get past all that. Now enrollment cliff, now small institutions in trouble, financial, blah, 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 right? There's so much to talk about. How are you guys doing? How's faculty, how's staff, how are students?
Yeah, you know, I think I would say that to put it mildly, the past 3 years have been a roller coaster, as you were mentioning, right? Some of these different issues that we're all facing, whether it's a really dynamic labor market, whether we're looking at issues regarding enrollment. I would say the college has fared fairly well despite these. I think in part because it's got a really resilient message that really hits to a core constituency. We're the only private art and design institution in the state of Minnesota, so we have a degree of kind of regional traction, which is really important. We particularly have been serving a high population of Pell eligible students, which is really part of the kind of cultural ethos and the DNA of the institution itself. So about over 40% of our students are Pell eligible. And so serving that group of at-need students is important, and it relates to issues regarding diversity and complexity and nuance within our college campus environment too. One in four of our students is considered first generation. We only are seeing an increase in diversity, which makes a lot of sense for us from not just a socioeconomic, but also an ethnic and cultural perspective. We have quite a few of our students that identify as non-binary. And so that adds kind of color to it. it also goes ahead and provides kind of the landscape in which we're facing. We have really gifted faculty and just went through an engaged process with them as part of the ratification of two union collective bargaining agreements. And that's, again, kind of part of the kind of cultural landscape that we, the higher education exists in more broadly, and our college certainly is part of. You know, that being said, I'm continually amazed by kind of the work that our students are doing, but also just kind of the way we start to see pedagogy evolving, and specifically creative-based pedagogy in this field. I think this is a really interesting time for institutions that are focused on creativity, like MCAD is. And I think that it'll be interesting to see how institutions like MCAD handle the next 3 to 5 years.
Are you referring directly or around AI as a part of what you're talking about?
You know, I think, Joe, from my perspective, there isn't a boring aspect of this job. And there's always, I mean, I think a year ago, we probably were not talking about AI the way we are talking about AI now. AI is something that we're not going to be able to avoid. And we've already started to have deeply invested conversations from conversations with our students, to our faculty and staff and our board of trustees about the implications for that. And what do we need to teach to as we start to teach students that are going out into the world and really are, as we see them, being creative leaders. And I think that's the kind of shift. So obviously understanding what are the tools that students need to understand about AI. This has to go well beyond any kind of nominal notion of saying, hey, we want to make sure people don't plagiarize an art history paper by using ChatGPT, right? And since we really understand that this is a presence that's going to be part of our world. And as we're engaging in students to have them be productive as they leave the college, that's one piece of this. But I'd also have to say that that there are so many other parts of this. We're still understanding the impact and the need for us to support students that have had an educational experience, whether it's in high school or whether it's in college during the pandemic. The toll on mental health, the toll on study patterns and academic performance are things that I think we're going to be seeing for years to come. And I think that like other institutions, we really have to, and I think we are really focused on figuring out more contoured ways for that type of student support.
Let me ask one more, Vistas, and then I'll hand it to you, because I promised Vistas I'd give him as much mic time to tire him out today. But then I can't stop talking. It's like, you know, anyway, you talked about the diversity of student evolving. Almost, and the university has to evolve with the diversity of student. What kind of student services have evolved during or in simultaneous evolution with the diverse student? Do you have talks around that? Do you have, you know, what can we do to serve this growing diverse population that we're not doing now? How does that look for a school like MCAD?
Yeah, I think in some ways we almost need to go ahead and replace the term diverse student, right, with us to be more comprehensive about what we're talking about here. I think that for me the new frontier here for what higher education needs to more broadly contend with is a nuanced and elaborate construct regarding accessibility. And in some ways, I would say accessibility for me is in some ways superseding the notion of diversity. And by that, we're looking at economic accessibility. So how affordable is your institution? In terms of kind of direct costs, but indirect costs, we're looking at understanding how are we supporting our students with physical disabilities and the need for our institutions to be more universally accessible. But we're also talking about neuroatypical diversity, right? And we're talking about the ability to provide additional psychological support.
Yes.
I come to the table with, from both, on one hand, thinking about the stewardship I have to do for an institution, but also understanding, like so many of us, I'm also a parent, and I'm raising a neurodiverse child. And so I also start to look at this from the long game of understanding kind of from a personal relationship to understand that students that are coming into an institution with significant neuroatypical challenges are also some of the most gifted and brilliant students an institution can see. So what you start to see is this evolution of the notion of the 2E learner, the twice exceptional learner, right? The learner that has exceptional needs within a classroom environment, but also exceptional gifts and abilities. And so I guess I'd say that for me, I think diversity becomes almost kind of like it becomes like a safe word for us. We can kind of like hang our hat and say, we need to be more diverse. I think we have to tease out what do we mean. And I'd say that for me, again, the frontier for higher education and for what we're trying to pursue at the college is a more broader form of accessibility. How do you really support faculty to have students that have Tourette's syndrome in that class and not just try to minimize the disturbance so the education can occur, but how do you feel like that student that may have Tourette's syndrome has so much to offer and so much to give in that classroom? And that's going to require resources now and resources that we still need to develop and still need to fundraise for or raise revenue for to support that type of environment. But I think in some ways that's the real frontier is more comprehensive understanding of accessibility.
You know that the world of higher education is experiencing evolutions and revolutions. You want to be part of the progress. Commencement, the beginning of a new era in higher education with insights from more than 100 college and university presidents, will show you how. Get your copy of Commencement, the beginning of a new era in higher education now on Amazon. Right away, we think you're going to love it. It's
amazing.
All right, Vistas, all you.
So Sanjeet, if you don't mind, when we talk about art and design, various people will construe those terms in different ways. For MCAD itself, what's the scope of art and design? And how do you bring that together?
Well, and I think it's a really good question. And I would say that a critique of the kind of industry of art and design institutions is really based upon being overly hung up on that binary, right? And since that binary, on one hand, the number of institutions that have AD is at the end of their acronym is not insignificant. And while some institutions have maybe gone through a renaming process, sometimes if you look underneath the hood, there's still a pretty traditional focus on
absolutely
art.
Yep.
And I think if it's one thing that we've learned from the past 3 years and the ability for us to hit control reset during the pandemic, it's to realize that those binaries are so artificial in nature. And so I guess I would say that I, in general, I see us replacing it with a more broader construct regarding creativity. And I'd say we live that in the institution. We have a bachelor's in science and arts entrepreneurship, which very much defies the kind of the two art or design kind of boundaries and really is seen as both through the strength of the students in its major, but also just for it being a service discipline that students from all walks, whether you're in film or you're in printmaking or you're in graphic design or multimedia, that you're all going ahead and accessing, you're all accessing that. Another way I think that we're trying to change that binary is that we started offering a master's degree in creative leadership. We're taking this idea of creative leadership and really seeing it as an alternative to an MBA. We're saying the fact that traditional models of leadership have failed. And now's the time for where we can start to see a creative ethos can help truly drive our notion of what leadership is. And that's the degree program that's essentially mostly remote with an in-person component over the summer. So I think that's part of it. It's to kind of chisel away and not just do it from a mission, vision, and values perspective, but do it from an academic perspective and a programming perspective.
No, that's fascinating and absolutely needed in today's world. You're correct. The type of leadership that we've counted on over the past century is very different from what we're going to need going forward. So one of the things I was struck by when I looked at, say, MCAD, was the focus on how the students and faculty engage, impact, and transform. Can you give your listeners a little bit of an idea as to the different ways outside the classroom where MCAD actually makes this happen on a day-to-day basis?
Sure. I think one example is that we're deeply invested in the Whittier neighborhood, which is the community where the college is located. And I'd say that we have students on a regular basis that does work intentionally with the Whittier neighborhood. We've been involved in some of the significant planning conversations about how this neighborhood's being redeveloped and designed. And just as a reminder to the two of you and to the listeners too, is that we're a community that saw some significant devastation with all the social unrest that occurred after the murder of George Floyd by Minneapolis police officers. And so we The aspect of rebuilding and being part and available as part of those conversations is something that we need to make sure our students and faculty and staff are participating and are supported during that. So that's one example of that. We've worked on collaborations with major corporations to deal with everything from understanding how to create more racially diverse and more racially supported color palettes for their design work. We've done work with entities like Red Wing Shoes to start to understand how they can go ahead and continue their arc of being purpose-driven and socially responsible in terms of their work. So I'd say that there's a myriad of different ideas of how we're able to do that. And I'd say a lot of it also occurs with leadership that we see from our alumni, right? Our alumni are doing everything from right now working on helping looking at monitoring climate change and its relationship to, orca populations in Scandinavia, to going ahead and running and founding nonprofits in the Twin Cities. And I think one of the things we have to do is stop going ahead and assuming that the arc of learning ends when that student crosses the graduation stage. Lifelong learning is it's a really great phrase to say, in the sense it's like, I mean, it sounds nice and we always like to use that. It's kind of like diversity. It's one of these kind of buzz phrases that sounds good. But how do we start to really transform this idea of support and mentorship and growth from someone when they cross that graduation stage? So how are we more intentional about the number of continuing education classes we're able to offer our alumni at little to no cost? How are we starting to think more about mentorship, for our alumni? And part of that's a shift because the degree of career changes that a graduate can expect now are so much significant are significant compared to where it was 10 or 15 or 20 years ago.
100%.
That's fascinating. I'm glad you brought up the continuing education one, because I'm sure that this is a topic that has been of relevance, not just recently, but also in the past, that we've hidden from. What is the value of a degree versus what is the value of a credential, and how do you move forward as an educational institution in trying to make sure that what we provide to our students isn't obsolete before they actually graduate? And how do we keep them relevant in the world today?
And I think I think you're touching on something that is really a passion of mine, which is, I think oftentimes we've seen continuing education as somewhat the stepchild of the traditional kind of, here we are in the hallowed halls of an institution. And we say that because really to be here and to really learn something, you've got to be here for 4 years, and what we're doing here is, in some ways, it's really dangerous to embrace CE as a major piece of this, because what you're doing is you're kind of looking, you're scrutinizing that and to say, well, no, you're offering something of value that may not be this long-term relationship that institutions in higher education have really depended on. I think I would say that I really think in some ways the cusp of true curricular innovation is coming in continuing education. It's coming in the focus of understanding how you can be an entry point into someone that's skeptical of going to college. You can be an entry point of someone that says, I am thinking about a career shift. It's not just the kind of retirees doing painting classes or ceramic classes. Well, we don't have a ceramics program at MCAD, but doing that type of work, which has been the traditional notion, it's truly a place for what I think is real, not just pedagogical transformation for an individual, but I actually think that's really the proving ground for any kind of curricular innovations that we're planning on testing out that may end up going ahead and becoming a degree program later. I think that we do ourselves a disservice in higher education to not really look at that. And that's everything from master classes to certificate programs to beyond. I think that there are so many ways we can really start to transform that aspect of learning.
You know, what's funny about what you're saying about certificates and degrees, and I think it happens across higher education in conversation, whether we'd like to admit it or not, is there is this thought that if you offer continuing education courses, you're actually cannibalizing your own degree students, moving them away from a potential degree towards a faster in and out. And, well, that student, you know, am I hurting my own program? But wait a minute, we do have to offer these continuing education programs or else we're not going to have these students interested in our degree programs. So there's this kind of catch-22 that colleges and universities have to work through, and how they offer CEs and how the student understands it. Because there are so many offerings for continuing education, for credit, non-credit. It's hard to understand. We talk about this all the time here. Say, how does a student really work through that? And how does a university play a role in providing some structure for it?
And I think my analogy kind of towards what you're saying, Joe, is it's a little bit like turning into the spin instead of resisting the spin, right? Because that notion of seeing it's a threat, it's going to be a threat to kind of our current educational model is a natural reaction. And it's the same natural reaction akin to the idea of turning against the spin, right? And since and it's not the right thing to do. And my kind of inclination now is to say, you actually lean into that change. And I think what it may be scary at first, in the sense it may feel like you're actually kind of potentially, and maybe at first you are losing some students in the sense to that. My sense is the net positive will far outweigh that, because what you're going to do is open up greater interest in what you do, and you have to be solid for what you do. It's something for us to learn from, right? I mean, if people really feel like that something that you've been dead set on offering as a four-year degree program has much more interest in it being someone taking two or three courses and that's enough, and then they're full, we have to be able to look at some of that informed, both the qualitative and the quantitative analysis of what that may tell us. And it may be like, well, as much as we were dead set on that, it looks pretty clear to us that people are perceiving the value of this in a totally different way. And again, I think this is where we have to look at the pandemic as an incredibly helpful cudgel, if you will, for us to start to demolish some of these preconceived notions of what higher education was. And I'm going to go back to that term accessibility, right? In the sense, we have to really be able to rethink about what is it that we deliver and how do we deliver it, you know, and be prepared to go ahead and realize that it may go against some of our preconceived notions of what we thought a measure of success is.
Nailed it.
Vistas, follow you. I can keep going all day. You're on mute if you want to talk, you know.
Sanjeev, to move to a slightly different topic. The world today has become much smaller and much larger simultaneously. What do you see the role of the global perspective within MCAD and how it might actually have an effect on both the local community and then the community in the US?
Yeah, I think that it's important that while MCAD has an incredibly strong kind of regional resonance, that we're not myopic in nature. And, you know, and I'm fortunate to have faculty that travel all over the world and show their work or invited to give talks all over the world. So the MCAD kind of brand is out there, if you will. We've been attracting top talent from across the country to go ahead and work at MCAD over the past 3.5 years since I've been around. And I think that's significant for us, not just from a brand and reputational perspective, but from a perspective of getting those diverse thinkers into our classrooms. And again, I'll say that we've got to be able to ask ourselves a very fundamental question, which is, what do we know now that we didn't know 5 years ago, right? And through that, I'm not just talking about the pandemic, but I'm talking about a couple of years before the pandemic too. And obviously so many of us were able to bring in a scholar from Tokyo into our classrooms through Zoom immediately. And while our rush to going back to in-person, and as an art and design institution, in-person education is so important. It's so important to get people into a fabrication lab. It's so important to get people into kind of into the print studios and everything else. But at the same time, we don't want to go ahead and rush towards any kind of return to normal, which I'm terrified when institutions say we're going to go back to normal. I'm concerned they haven't learned anything from the past 3 years. We have to go ahead and understand, how do we lean in to our ability to access global thought leaders in ways and keep those relationships going? I think part of this is that, you know, we're trying to hitch our wagons to remarkable corporate partnerships that really do have a global reach. And I think, and we do see MCAT alumni out there as being kind of leaders within this too. But it's something I think that we as an institution have to lean into more. We have students that come from all 50 states. We have a modest international population, which can certainly grow larger, and I expect will grow larger in the years ahead. But I think for us, it's a reputational aspect that we're growing. And I think there's no way we can simply go ahead and focus on a regional identity.
Keep going, buddy. Vista's
simultaneously, if you look at it, I mean, you've talked about the changes through the pandemic. One of the things that was brought up more and more is the use of AR and VR and simulation. How do you see that impacting the future of MCAD and, for that matter, the future of higher education?
Yeah, I think emergent technologies is something that we've been speaking quite a bit about, you know, and I think it's something that I don't have a specific answer in terms of what we're doing, but we are starting to partner with local foundations and other entities to start to think more intentionally about what's the systems of support, but also where do we think MCAD positions itself as a thought leader and looking at everything from, you know, looking at everything from VR and AR to AI and beyond. Again, like I mentioned earlier, it's here, it's not going away. And what we want to do is make sure students can go ahead and really start to lean into this. And this goes back to CE. I think continuing education becomes an incredible platform. And I'd say that in part because these issues regarding technology and these emergent technologies are changing so rapidly. I think we do ourselves a disservice. We're not going to go ahead and build an explicit degree program tomorrow on AI right now.
And it'll be dusty three weeks after you create it.
We'll have to try to create an AI. And that's where the metabolism of CE comes really into its sharpness, the nimbleness for us to be able to rapidly prototype courses and get it out there and then respond. So I think in some ways, on one hand, it's about identifying a specific technology like AR or VR or AI of some kind as it evolves. But I think more importantly, it's about changing the metabolism for which our students are able to digest and comprehend these types of emerging issues so that they feel like that they've got the ability to go ahead and understand these and understand other ones once they leave MCAD. That's kind of what we're going for is less about a focus on a technology, but more about a focus on changing our students' mindsets to feel like that they're able to understand how do I drill into this and not feel overwhelmed and say, you know what, I've got to put my blinders on, or I feel like I've got to stop everything else I'm doing and absorb just this. I do think it's a change of thinking. And it's something that requires us to be more adaptable. You know, it requires us to go ahead and we have traditional disciplines and how those disciplines can become more flexible and more open to going ahead and allowing for these dialogues to occur. It requires us to be able to hold space with sometimes a more rapid degree of change than some are willing to accept or comprehend.
Live in the now.
That's great. So one other question, if you don't mind, Sanjeet, and taking it to a little bit more of a personal level. You've obviously done a huge amount in the three and a half years that you've been the leader of MCAD. But now trying to look at Sanjeet Sethi, the professional administrator, versus Sanjeet Sethi, the artist and the person. So how do you bring those two together?
Well, you know, I think I have a passion for connecting ideas with communities. And I think that that's been kind of a real strong passion of mine. You know, I think that has been the kind of bridge. My hope is that I've never been a college president before. It was never part of my official career track. I did not, you know, kind of 15 years ago say, okay, my goal is to become a college president. That's not to say that I kind of tripped into this position. I obviously kind of like, I've been fortunate to have some really remarkable professional experiences. But it comes from a conviction that creativity is one of the greatest tools and probably still one of the greatest unrealized tools to bring about positive transformational community change. And I guess I'd say that that's true in some of my own work that I've done. on a personal level, but also through some of the leadership work that I've done. I think probably one of the roles that I've really embraced over the past 3 years in particular has not just been about stewarding an institution through the pandemic and creating a new mission, vision, and values of the institution. But I think more importantly, it's also just been about the ability for us to see ourselves as mentors and for us to support other cultural institutions to go ahead and do similar work. Oftentimes leaders talk about their board service as almost kind of like an honorary thing or kind of an ancillary thing to their work. But, you know, I'm fortunate to chair the board of the Artist Communities Alliance, which is a remarkable nonprofit that supports artist residency programs nationally. It's just such a phenomenal organization. Its role that it plays in as another side to higher education, to helping support emerging artists and emerging cultural voices is so powerful. I play a role as a mentor to BIPOC communities too, and that's really important as well, to emerging BIPOC leaders. And I think that work, it for me is another example of existing in a creative mindset as much as a creative practice, a personal creative practice is.
Excellent.
Vistas, we got one more. It looks like you're loading up for another one here.
No, go for it.
All right. Well, you know, I was going to say we've drilled Sanjeev pretty good. He's a pro answering all these questions.
It's been fascinating listening to him.
Yeah, it really is. And there is a lot. You know, I guess one of my questions is the I don't know what you would call it, but when you talk about art and design, you hear art, and sometimes, I'm not saying everyone, but people hear art, and there's an immediate question of relevance or workplace relevance. There's a big skills movement now. Liberal arts, people go, oh, it doesn't have value, or art in general. To your point, creativity is the basis, in my opinion, for effective leadership. We don't talk about it that much. I love the program that you've built there. That's actually incredible. What's the demand, and how do students communicate with you about their interest in art? Is the interest there? Is there questions about relevance? Is that not even a thing for students who are interested in art and design programs, and it's more the public?
You know, I think there is a demand, and since there's certainly a demand, our numbers continue to always look better than the year before, and so that's a really great sign. And that's despite the pandemic. I think so. There is a value proposition that we at the college and through our gifted admissions team, I think, is able to connect with. I would say that I take so seriously the fact that one in four of our students' families have said, we've never sent a child to college. We've never been to college ourselves. And we are entrusting in you to go ahead and educate our child with an institution that is really embedded in creativity. And that's an incredible responsibility for an institution to take on. And for me to take on personally, I think it's an incredible responsibility. And I would say that one thing we talk about is there are three reasons why I think an MCAD grad is inherently employable, you know, and I think why creativity, I think, wins in the end, which is one is we teach our students the incredible tangible aspect of failure. In the sense, it's one thing, it's different if you've gone ahead and not quite followed a formula too, and you got 54 instead of 43 as your response. It's another thing if you didn't register your print correctly, and you spent all this time and you have to go ahead and tear up this work that you've spent a long time doing. So understanding the tangible aspects of failure is a phenomenal lifelong learning skill. The second one is to understand that the world is inherently asymmetrical in nature. As much as we want to believe things exist in a P&L statement solely, right? And since the world is asymmetrical, you go into a conversation, you're going into a negotiation, you're trying to go ahead and get a project through, there are so many varied needs and different components to this work. And for our students to understand the world's asymmetrical and that's okay, and they can still exist in that, is another important tool for survival after college. And then the last one is that there isn't a problem that exists in this world, whether going ahead and creating a new bar of soap or going ahead and creating a nonprofit that doesn't have a cultural dimension to it. Every single problem we deal with in the world has a cultural component to it. And my sense is, as we talk about those things, people connect with it and they realize that we don't exist in the terrain of being esoteric. We exist in a skill, discipline focused area where we're producing multivalent problem solvers. Very few of our students that leave MCAD stick to their degree that they studied in. That's not a sign of failure on our part. I'd say it's a sign of nimbleness and success on our part. It goes back to that idea of saying, I think we need to chisel away at this notion of art and design, because I don't think our students really paid that much attention to those two binaries. The printmaker goes out and becomes a creative director for an ad agency, not unheard of at all. The animation a student has become an executive producer for a television series at a local, with a local, a major national producer. So we see those things all the time. And I would say that that's where the kind of the informed creativity is really the tie that binds.
Informed creativity. I like that. Well, we like to ask our guests the same two questions to end every episode here on the EdUp Experience podcast. But before I ask you those, I have to ask my guest co-host and one of the smartest men alive, Vistas Karbari, if he has any more questions here.
No, I think this has been fascinating, Sanjeet. I mean, one thing that I might ask you just to end it all is, if you had to tell a group of students as to what they should be taking, from what I've been hearing, you'd basically tell them that you should take something in creativity, art and design, and use that to further themselves in the world. Is that correct?
I do. I think that for all the R1 institutions that are out there, I think eventually one's going to have to come to terms to understand that issues regarding creative thinking and design thinking should really start to be, and they should demand that be part of the bedrock entry-level pedagogy, beyond the traditional, and I'd say kind of colonial models of assuming that it's your basic entry, English 101, et cetera. I think it's time for us, especially as we start to see the changes that exist globally that you were talking about earlier, for us to embrace creativity, either through art or design and a combination of both, as being a real core driver in being able to educate our students. And so I would like to see it as kind of being one of these mainstays for institutions beyond some of our more specialized institutions like MCAD.
Sanjeet, what didn't we say about MCAD? Is there something that needs to be said? Anything we forgot to ask you? Anything coming up? The microphone is yours for a minute or two. Anything you want to say? And at the end, second question, what do you see for the future of higher education?
Yeah. In terms of MCAD, I'd say that we're an institution that's really driving home this idea that we're here to educate the next generation of creative leaders. We have we're in an incredible physical location with a fantastic cultural ecosystem that exists in the Twin Cities. And as the Twin Cities is growing and changing in dynamic forms, MCAD's really part of that journey. I think we're really fortunate to be able to go ahead and attract talent, both in our students and our faculty, but also in our staff as well. So I think now is a really interesting time for us as an institution, as we start to focus on issues regarding accessibility, as we're starting to focus on issues regarding creative leadership. It's a time to go ahead and think clearly about kind of what MCAD has to offer. In terms of the future of higher education, I think the future of higher education is really going to have to be about de-siloing itself. And that's something that becomes, again, a buzzword, but to really make meaningful steps to go ahead and deconstruct some of its very kind of colonially based underpinnings of feeling like the safest, the best way to teach a discipline is through its own through a security and kind of privilege within its own structure. We've sometimes bandied around the idea of interdisciplinarity and it sounds good, but I think there has to be some more rigorous deconstruction regarding some of these silos for higher education to show a greater degree of relevance. The second thing I'd say about higher education is that it's the institutions that get and embrace issues regarding a comprehensive approach to accessibility that I think are the ones that are going to be thriving in 5 to 7 and 10 years from now, versus ones that somehow think that it's just about a quote unquote return to normal. If institutions aren't asking themselves what have they learned from the past 3 to 5 years? I'm not sure they're going to be around in another 7 to 10 years.
Nailed it.
I would say that is a good piece of advice to end this episode. I'm going to just say that this was a fascinating conversation about MCAT, about the future of higher education, from a leader who's doing the work. I love talking to people who are really doing the work hands-on to craft the future. One of those people is my guest co-host today. He hasn't been on in a while, but he's here again. And I did realize that about halfway through the episode, I turned my sound effects on. So I'm guessing for the first half, the sound didn't come through that great. And all of a sudden you started hearing things. Vistap didn't tell me.
One of us is in deep trouble.
We'll see if we have him back now. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Vistap Karbari. He is a professor of mechanical, aerospace, and civil engineering at the University of Texas Arlington. Vistap's always good to have you here.
Always a pleasure being here with you.
And you know I want you back, buddy. I love you.
I look forward to it.
And our guest, esteemed, your guest today, talking about everything art and design and why you can't just have those two things, why creativity is the underpinning for the future of leadership. His name is Sanjeet Sethi. He is the president of the Minneapolis College of Art and Design. Sanjeet, did you have a good time here on the podcast today?
I absolutely did. I want the two of you over, so consider yourselves invited. So,
Thank you very much. I might take you up on it. Would love to see it.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. You've just ed upped. It's time to
level up.
The beginning of a new era in higher education begins with you. Order your copy of Commencement, The Beginning of a New Era in Higher Education by Kate Colbert, Dr. Joseph Lucio, with contributions by Elvin Freites. It's higher education's must-read book of 2022. Discover how you can seize the moment to change higher education forever. Commencement, The Beginning of a New Era in Higher Education, now available on Amazon. For bulk orders, contact Kate, Joe, or Elvin